And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker of the evening. It's Greg M. from New York.
Hi, everybody. My name's Greg. I'm alcoholic. Ooh, alcoholic. That's a really great word for me to remember. It took me quite a few years to even understand what the hell that meant to me. But now I know what it is. I know that I suffer from an illness. And as far as I know, in my life, it's incurable. And, you know, I found a solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. I discovered how I don't have to drink today. Oh, my God, what a miracle that was. What a relief, what a transforming experience for someone like me that knows they don't have to drink today, that got a room full of friends that'll help me, that'll go to any length to help me not drink. And you got to know that's how I feel about you, because that's what this deal's about. I mean, Roy, thank you so much. You really, you know, you touched my heart. You really, really let me know that AA does work. It's a shining of example of what a failure like me for years tried to do, but I just could never do it. I know there's some new people here, and I tell you, there was a guy where I got sober in Hawaii, in Maui, and that's where I did my worst drinking. That's where I found AA, and it was just glorious. I tell you, just glorious. But there was this gentleman, and I don't know how many years he had at the time, but he still, I just tried to emanate his, what he does, and I hope that's what I do tonight, is I hope that I speak with a heart of love right at you that are new here, that I penetrate that wall, that exterior that I know is up there, because, you know, you got to be scared to death. You got to be fearful. There's this whole deal about, you know, learning how to love and be loved and be cherished and be held. I mean, it's wasn't in my repertoire, believe me. That was the last thing that I knew how to do. But Joe, he always spoke at a really basic level, and he talked good, solid AA. And that's what I want to share with you tonight. And if you're new, God, you just, you know, this thing, you just don't have to drink again, ever again, starting right now tonight. There is a miracle, and it's called the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it doesn't mean you're not going to do a lot of hard work. It doesn't mean you're not going to, you know, be in the dumps and have to chew off some big chunks of truth about yourself. But one of the advantages of being on the path for a while, I know now in here that everything is all right. It always was before, but I didn't have the tools to have that experience that know that there is a loving, creative intelligence in the universe, a God that loves me deeply and wants me to be on the path. I really know that for me today, I know that the whole reason for my existence is to learn how to be love and service to my fellows. And that's the deal. Doesn't matter what I drive, where I be, anything on this material plane is just doesn't matter. It's about being of service to each other so that we can all be the same. That's a phenomenal experience. We call it anonymity, right? And it's not about the anonymity that says I'm supposed to not let you know who I am. It's about the anonymity that everything else doesn't matter. Our commonality is what matters. I don't want you to know me other than someone that just wants to love and cherish you and help you help me not to drink. So if you're new, God, just keep coming back. It's not as scary as I once thought it was. You know, I've been loved enough in AA, and I've been guided by good sponsorship and working those steps, and I've learned that this life is a safe place. It really is. It's very safe, and I've found my place today. Now, obviously, it wasn't like that always. I was born a little north of here in Inglewood, California, and I was unsuccessful at living. right from the beginning. And I didn't know why. I didn't know why I was so frightened of people. I mean, I didn't have the tools to deal with you. And when it came to emotions, God, it just threw me for a loop. Whether it was men crying, women crying, and love, anger, any of those things, I was just a cripple and I was a runner. I shut down and I got out of Dodge because I couldn't figure it out. And it was so frightening. And I was one of those people that really just wanted to be loved and comforted and, you know, lots of attaboys and all of that stuff. And just like Roy said, I got it. My family was a good family, full of love and full of confidence building and elevating. But my vessel was broken, had no bottom. All that stuff would go in and flow out right out the bottom. I didn't know how to retain that stuff. And so I was empty all the time and very frightened. And I was one of those people that I was a puppet, a little marionette. You could play the tune and I would dance the tune if you would love me and accept me and acknowledge me. I was going to wear whatever mask you wanted me to wear. And that's how I lived my life because I was not in tune with what was in here. I mean, this was not good. It was the thoughts I had and the visions I had, it was very bad. I saw you with outside vision that said you were doing really well. And I always compared myself with you, and I failed miserably. And I had this cloud that followed me around. It was a dark cloud, thunder and lightning and raining on me. And, you know, as a 12, 13-year-old, I was very comfortable with that. I mean, I had, over those short period of time, I thought that's what life was about. But boy, there was that day that came when we all know what that is. I assume there might be one or two successful drinkers here. But I was an unsuccessful drinker. But I'll tell you, that first time I got drunk, you know, it just turned on the light switch. And that's the only way I can tell. I was in the dark. I drank that booze and it went down and exploded and that feeling came over me that said, I am all right. I have finally felt what it's supposed to be like. It just kind of all went in sync. And as Roy said, from that day forward into the day I, on my knees, surrendered to you, I drank alcohol every day. For the effect produced by alcohol. I tried to relive that feeling of elation, that feeling of being free, of being whole, that, you know, that big hole in my gut and the wind blowing through and it got sealed up. I mean, that's what booze did for me. Not to mention assorted chemicals here or there. But, you know, that stuff, I didn't have a personality change with that stuff. I got strung out on that stuff. You gave me booze, and I had a personality change. I came to life. And right from the beginning, I was a blackout drinker. I went to jail. And I think from the very first time I got drunk and had a blackout, when I came to that next morning, I was guilty. Before I even figured out what I had done, I was guilty because I wasn't supposed to feel like that. My tape, my psyche, had already been imprinted that I'm a bad person. And feeling as good as booze made me feel, it had to be bad for me. But, God, did it do things for me that I just sought in every opportunity I could get. My drinking was very bad. I got thrown out of Los Angeles County, barred from ever living there. I moved down to San Diego. I'd live with my mom, and every time I had to go see my dad, I had to go down to the probation officer to get a note that in case I got pulled over by the CHP, I could show them that I'm allowed in L.A. County to see my folks. You know, those experiences, those times in jail and that, all the stuff that it didn't even make a mark on my attitude. Because booze was so good to me. It was really good. came down here and the same story happened. I, a couple of years living here, got in trouble. And down at Del Mar one day, I'm 17 years old and $2 on a pony, and I got $75 and I'm off to Hawaii. And so I went to Hawaii in 1967, never came back. I lived there for 32 years, and it was glorious, running naked down the beaches, eating the fruit off the trees, drinking some of that sugar cane swipe, that white lightning that makes you just go insane. It was a joyous time to be and I had hair down to my back and all over my face, and it was. I remember my dad, the first time he bailed me out of jail. You know, and I'm sure this is a very common experience for all of you. You know, that parent comes down first. You know, I'm first child in jail. I'm in there for drunken disorderly or assault and battery or something, and he comes down. And I remember seeing that look in his eyes of disgust and just, you know, it hurt my heart. It really hurt me deep inside to disappoint my dad that way. And this next time I saw that, he was driving up my driveway. I was living in this funky little shack in Maui. And I thought it was a cool pad. It was a crash pad. We had, you know, a little commune going on. And he came driving up that dirt driveway, and I'm in some cut-off pants and, you know, hair all over the place. And I saw that same look in his eyes, you know, and I was 19 or 20. And that look of, you know, raising a son that was really just a no-good degenerate and a failure at life. But it didn't change me. You know, that booze is what, that lifestyle about that booze. Now, I've always had problems driving with, I mean, just bad problems. I was telling a couple of stories before the meeting and a couple of stories. You know, I've always crashed cars. It's always just been my dilemma. And I finally figured out why. Is that, you know, I'm a little off balance, and I always hold the wheel with my left hand. And as I'm nodding out, the car goes left. And I've always ended up in the middle of the freeway fences. That's where you could always find me. But my drinking and driving, really, I'm you know, in all seriousness, I'm one of those people that killed somebody in a blackout with my car. And, you know, it was really one of those moments as, you know, that person was dying and I was there, and it was terrible. And I swore off booze. Never, ever drink again. And I was drunk within 24 hours because I had to drink. And I had long since lost the ability to decide whether I was going to drink or not, and I didn't know that. And that was about 7 or 8 years before I finally had enough. But those next 7 or 8 years were just the kind of drinking that I don't wish on anybody. It was a kind of dark drinking where, you know, you'd be smiling and think you were having fun, but you were drinking for oblivion. You just had so much pain, you wanted out. The terrible thing with people like me, you know, you start getting involved with, you know, women or husbands or whatever. And I, you know, married a gal, we had a child, and I was nowhere in any position to be a husband or a father. And, you know, that ended up just in a terrible mess. And, you know, it just was really a black part of my life. And it ended up where, you know, she threw me out, and I was living in a car and wanted to kill myself. And it was just, I was at my wit's end, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I really didn't. And even today when I looked out, and I know this meeting is a little bit about public information and about being able to, if there's friends of AA here that aren't members, it's about, you know, letting you know what AA is and what it's not. And I look back, I got sober at 31. And I don't think I'd ever had anybody come to my school or any place, any workplace I was at and do a little PI pitch and tell me what AA is and what it's not. And so I didn't know what was wrong. I really thought I was a bad person. I thought I was just the scum of the earth, someone that couldn't control their drinking. Couldn't make that decision. So that day, I found myself living in that car, and you know, I was nursing a half a pint of Southern Comfort and a little dope I was dealing. Thought I was going to turn another trick or do something different and get my act together. But it was just, you know, we read about those four horsemen of terror, frustration, bewilderment. It was my time to surrender and do that thing we all got to do. And I got to do it all the time. And it's still one of the most difficult things to do is say, please help me. In this instance was, I can't stop drinking. Please help me. And this man reached out and said, come with me. And from that day to this day, I've never had a drink, pill, fix, anything. Not because of me, absolutely not because of me, but it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps that this miracle has happened in my life. Now, at the time on Maui, there was no treatment centers, and the hospital wouldn't allow drunks in. You know, the local AAs would try to, you know, always got some gastritis or something, and to get you in that way, but you know, they did for me is they just bounced you around from household to household. You got a couch for a week in somebody's house, and they 12-stepped you and, you know, sit there and read the 24-hour book to you in the morning and start talking to you about step 1, 2, and 3. And they bounced me around for several months, and that's how I learned AA. Went to meetings every day. There was one a day on Maui at the time, just 7 meetings. And we all piled in cars, and we would drive to the meetings, and we'd have the meeting before the meeting and the meeting after the meeting. And I remember one time I'm in some meeting, I don't know where it is, but the two guys got almost in a fist fight, and they're standing up screaming at each other in the middle of this meeting. And I figured out that I was in an intergroup meeting, and they were having I know Connie will get a kick out of that. There was having some discussion about money or something. And, but it was one of those first opportunities where my old tape, and I'll talk about that a little bit longer, but my imprint on life, my immediate reaction was to run because I saw some emotions going on. But I saw these two guys have this argument. They resolved it and hugged and sat down and continued their discussion. And I was fascinated how people could do that, could really process those two kinds of emotions almost simultaneously. Because for me, when I got angry, it was a lifetime. I mean, you were on my list, and I thought about you ad infinitum. Woke me up in the middle of the night thinking about you. And I wasn't one of those guys that would go confront you. I'm a backdoor kind of guy. I'd come and bite you in the butt and, you know, do you bad that way. And so I was really fascinated. And it was one of those things that I remember really had an impression on me. I wanted to learn how to resolve conflict. I was fascinated by it. My very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, they made sure that I had a book and a sponsor. They didn't let me leave that meeting until I had a book of Alcoholics Anonymous and a sponsor, and I'd already arranged to be at a meeting the next day. That first meeting, they did a step one. I went to a step study meeting, and they all spoke to my heart. And at the end of that meeting, they asked me if I'd like to say something, and I said, my name's Greg, and I was just following what they were doing. I said, I'm alcoholic. I didn't know what that meant. But it was a plea for help. And I had this overwhelming experience. And it came forth in tears and sobbing. And I sobbed and I cried. And I hadn't done that in ages. And guess what? A little piece of the armor was chinked and fell off. Because I'm one of those guys that build walls. And it's because of fear. I am so afraid to accept your love. I don't know how to love you back, but I'm so afraid to let you love me because that emotion is so frightening to let you inside me. I'm a 90-day wonder. I got this good sponsorship. And he said, you got lots of time on your hands. I want you to start this first page and you read that book until I tell you to stop. So I don't want you reading magazines, newspapers, listening to radio, watching TV, doing it. I reminded him I'm living in a car and I don't have any of that stuff. But what he was saying is that we're going to change your life 180 degrees starting right now today. We're not going to wait till next week to do the steps. We're not going to wait till next week to do it. We're going to, right now, today, we're going to start reading this book. Thank you, God. I can't tell you. I had a lot of time on my hand. I was living on a beach in a car. Pretty nice beach, too, I might add. But I started reading that book, and I couldn't retain much. But what I read, it just, another one of those experiences just touched my soul. I discovered that threefold nature of the illness of alcoholism. A little pet peeve, I'm going to do a little commercial here. I don't use the word disease because I don't think that's AA uses that word. It's an illness or a malady. You know, maybe other treatment centers or professionals use that word, but AA uses it's an illness or a malady or a sickness. And so I read in there that this threefold nature of this illness, and that for people like me, that when I ingest alcohol, I develop this phenomena of craving. Now, that was the thing that just nobody ever told me that. That I had a craving, a reaction. My body was different. I would react that way when I put booze in it, and that I had to have more because of it. And I remember those nights in the bar, pounding the bar. I'd called and said I'd be home at 6. And it was now 2 a.m. again. And I didn't know why I couldn't go home at 6 when everybody else did. I had to stay. Well, it was this phenomena that happened to me when I took that first drink. I came to a real understanding of what I'm going to say next, but that portion of the book where it talks about that strange mental twist leading up to that first drink. Now, I can kill a guy with my car, swear off for booze, and in less than 24 hours figure out why that wasn't a big deal and I should have another drink. Now, that is insanity. That is so crazy, and yet I could do that on a moment's notice when it came to booze. And I never even thought about it. I never knew that I had that kind of ability to rationalize or to somehow think the next one would be different when 20 years of drinking proved it never was different. And I read that stuff and I just started sobbing. It was my first little step to figure out that I wasn't a bad person, that I had an incurable illness that was progressive. Now, that's that elusive part of this thing that just recently, now, you know, I celebrated 30 years last Thursday. And I'm not a rocket scientist, but I'm no dummy either. Now, I haven't ever had a drink since that first one. But it's only in the last few years that I figured out the progression. I mean, I can read it. I know what it says, and I see enough people coming and going, and they tell me that it always gets worse, never better. But I hadn't had the experience myself, and my old way is I got to have the experience in order to believe it. But no, I figured out that, God, I have this illness that is progressing constantly, and I'm not drinking. And I owned it. I knew it in here that that is a truth for me. And I thank all of you that have, you know, by the grace of God, you're back here tonight. And I pray you never go out again. But it's all of your hard knocks that finally got through into my innermost self, knowing that progression of this illness and how elusive that is. I did those 90 steps in 90 days. Had a change of attitude, not an awakening that was going to come after a few more attempts through those steps, but I really had a change. I was starting to develop this new attitude on life. My sponsor was so good. When I got to those amend steps, I couldn't believe what he made me do. Now, I had all these assorted other things that I was doing, and I owed a lot of money. And I owed some money to some, illicit people. And he had me address envelopes to them and put a dollar in it. And I would mail them a dollar a week. Now, I owed him $20,000. A dollar a week. And I had to man, the guy had moved to Australia, so I had to put extra postage on it to get to Australia. But boy, was he teaching me a principle. Oh, my God. Because pretty soon I could put $5 in there and $10 and then $100. And God, before I knew it, it was all taken care of. I had amended that situation. I spent, my wife and I were in town to do a lot of stuff, but one of the main things today was to see one of our children. One of our children's up north in Santa Cruz going to school, and one's on a boat, just shipped out this afternoon on a cruise boat, and I have another one in Honolulu with my grandson. And then we're trying to track down our granddaughter. She's in this area, too. But it was so, and these are sober babies. My son in Hawaii was from the previous marriage, the one I destroyed. God, we're great friends today. Really good friends. His mom, best friends today. Like the grandchild. Oh, I'm grandpa. All of that goody stuff. But my daughter today. My daughter's 25 years old. She's just the light of my heart. She spent the day with us, and she's leaving us. She's 25 years old, and she comes and goes all the time. But she had tears in her eyes as she's saying goodbye to us for a week. She was going on an adventure. She's been around the world. She's not an infant, but this wonderful expression of love, right, between parent and child. Between AA members and AA members, and her ability to express that, it really touched my heart today. One of the things I've always been taught in AA is to, even though I've been through the steps, and I continue to go through them, and yes, I'm steeped in those last three maintenance steps, but I also try to work in other areas of my life. And, this last couple of years, I've been really trying to, what it says in the 12-step and 12-tradition book, step six, this is a step that separates the men's from the boys, right? Every time I read that step or listen to it in a meeting, I get this little, and, I'm still a boy. When you want to be really truthful about it, I'm still a boy. But I've come so far. I've developed through prayer, meditation, a lot of step work, a vision of who I want to be when I grow up. I really know who I want to be. And I'm on this path. I'm on this AA path. So for all these years, I still, when I have my first waking moment, I have, most days, I have my God on my lips. It's there. The first time that happened to me, I sat straight up in bed. I never had that experience before because that's, I never came from that place. But shortly after I have that experience, it's what AA meeting am I going to be in tonight? And I plan my whole day around it. I plan my 24 hours around that. And my days are really full, believe me. I got lots going on, but the most important day is planning. Most important thing is planning that day around where I'm going to be. Now, I may not get there, but I still plan the day around that. So I've been trying to really, that path, those walls I talked about, and learning how to love unconditionally, and most important, letting you love me so there is no walls in front of me and you, that I don't put anything up there for you. And what does it for me is my instincts. I believe that it is my job to align my will to my Creator's will for me. That's my job. And my problem all the time is these instincts that are just at rampage, at odds ends, always within me. And to find the right degree of application for those. And I find that this step six is one of those areas that I have to really work on. Now, where my areas are that keep me from really allowing you to love me at depth is I take shortcuts. I'm a shortcut person. And so if here's the problem and there's the solution, and I will gain spiritual growth by walking this path, I can figure out a shorter way to do it because it's time management. And, I'm constantly battling with that stuff in my head. When I first got to A, and I liken it to where I live in Sleepy Hollow, there's a train track right in front of our house. And early sobriety, I always got run over by this train of life. I didn't have the tools to get off the track. I didn't know how to do it because I was living an unsuccessful life. My reaction to life was always the same, very predictable, an old, B-rated movie or C-rated. I did the same thing over and over again and failed. First time I jumped off the track, I did something different. The train went by. I was amazed. I didn't know I could change what I was doing in life. And pretty soon I started with these tools and these steps being able to get off the track when I heard the whistle. Sometimes I could even get off the track when I knew it was, it's about time for it to come down the road, right? But the real men and women never get on the track to begin with. And I'm not there. In certain areas of my life, I'm still not there. And shame on me. I mean, intellectually, I know that I should be doing everything. Because what is the end result of that? I could be of maximum service to God and my fellows. So I died in AA. I came to AA and I surrendered and I had a spiritual death and I was reborn in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was given this new life and I've dedicated myself to this life and I allow things to put up walls and keep separation so that I may not be of maximum service to God and my fellows. We all have the ability, and I'm sure you all rejoice in being able to use your words with a new person doing 12-step, and you can talk to them and get in their ear, and you can say those things that kindle that spark of life, and those dead eyes brighten a little bit of hope. We do that for each other. And if I'm not spiritually fit, if I'm not doing those things to ensure that I do that well, someone's life is in the balance. How dare me, take a chance to screw that up? That's an old idea for me. Why would I do that? So I'm really working in this particular area in my life because I think it's that important. These three beautiful children that I have. I told you, I don't think, in AA, I don't think AA says alcoholism is a disease, it's an illness. I know our friends in medicine, some people think it's a disease, and some may even say it's hereditary. I don't know. I know that my three children are probably predisposed, although two of them have never seen their parents drink, and yet somehow they learned how to drink pretty good. One of my children already got a DUI, and the other one's had some bad experiences with booze. And, I told her the other day, I said, well, Kat, you know, in your area of life, you're an educated woman, so something's going on. You read a book and you find out, you know, you get some information on it. And I remember she read the book one night, and the first thing I saw her the next morning, she said, shit. So, I mean, this is the deal for me. This is what it's all about, is that those are my babies. And God forbid they have to do anything like I had to do to get here. I mean, God forbid. I know we've all laid in our gutters and we've all done those things. And, you know, I just hurts my heart when I think my babies may have to do that and feel like that and have a dark cloud over their head or want to slash their wrist or blow their brains out or just, I mean, that's terrible. And yet I know that happens all the time. But, you know, I say to you, I'm really, I'm there for your kids. I really am. I will do anything, go anywhere to be of help to someone if they want to stop drinking. And I know you feel that way about my kids. I mean, that's what this thing is about. Learning how to love and cherish and care for each other. I'm really pleased that you allowed me to share with you a little bit tonight. I just want to again say, if you are new, I really meant what I said when I said it took me about 5 years to get comfortable in AA. And what I meant that is inside these rooms with you, now I felt the love and I felt the comfort. But as soon as I walked out that door, I was a loner again. Because I was so embarrassed to be alcoholic. I was embarrassed that anybody else knew it. Now, we all know they knew it. But somehow it took me a long time to put on my coat of sobriety and wear it. And to be active in my community. And to be actively 12-stepping people. And to really know that that's why I am sober. Somewhere along that time, I became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the greatest thing when that day... I mean, people in here, just because you're in the room and admitting that you're an alcoholic doesn't make yourself a member unless you say so. And you don't have to tell anybody. It's something we all get to do for ourselves, is at some point in time we become members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And with membership comes responsibility for our future. And together we become responsibility to ensure that the hand of AA is always there for anyone reaching out for help. Thanks.